You're listening to the Friday Radio Zine here on KBOO Portland. In this segment of the Radio Zine, I'm going to play an interview that I did yesterday. I had the chance to interview comic artist Alison Bechtel. This is Kathleen Stevenson. I'm here with Alison Bechtel, comic artist of the syndicated strip Dykes to Watch Out For, and author of the new graphic memoir, Fun Home, a family tragicomic. She's also the winner of a number of awards, including numerous Lambda Literary Awards. Alison Bechtel, thanks for coming in to KBOO.
Thank you, Kathleen. My pleasure.
Your strip, Dykes to Watch Out For, started in 1983.
Yes.
What led up to it? What kind of drawing or storytelling had you done up to that point?
Well, I always drew as a kid. I mean, all children draw, but I never stopped. I kept drawing all through school and high school and college. All my notebooks are like filled with drawings. It was just this thing I did. I didn't combine storytelling with pictures till I was a lot older, though. I had some early experiments in cartooning and little strips or a little cartoon story, but mostly I didn't put that together till later. I kept like a diary. I did write and did a little bit of creative writing, but it took a while for the two things to come together.
Right. Had you been a fan of comics or...
I was a big Mad Magazine fan. Mm-hmm. I had a subscription when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
It was very exciting. I would just devour that when it came in the mail, when it was good. I haven't looked at it in a long time, but that was like in the late 60s, early 70s. It was amazing stuff.
Tell me a little bit about how you first got it out there. How did that happen with the strip that it got some inclusion in people's papers?
Well, I had just graduated from college, and I was sort of doing menial jobs in New York City. And what I did that was more meaningful to me was that I volunteered at this feminist newspaper called Woman News. This was 1981, 82. And also, as I was drawing in the evenings in my sketchbooks, I started drawing not the guys that I grew up drawing as a kid. I would just draw like lumberjacks and policemen and all these guys doing exciting things. I started drawing lesbians like me. I wanted to see people who look like me. I wanted to see that reflected back to myself. And so actually the first Dyke to Watch Out For showed up in the margins of a letter to a good friend of mine who I was writing to. And I just drew this crazy woman, this naked crazy woman holding a pot of coffee, and for some reason I gave it a title, Dykes to Watch Out For, plate number 27, as if I had 26 more of these illustrations somewhere, which I didn't, but I liked that idea of a series, and I started drawing a whole bunch of these Dykes to Watch Out For, and I showed them to my friends who worked at this paper, Woman News, where I was volunteering, and they said, well, we should put some in the paper. So they started being published in the summer of 1983. God, that's a long time ago.
Yeah.
And I never stopped. I just kept cranking them out after that.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. And so they just kept you on regularly, and then one thing led to another. And
yeah, it was a monthly thing at first. And they weren't strips at first. They were like, you know, single-panel cartoons like you'd see in The New Yorker, a picture with a caption. But eventually they evolved into longer strips, and then they developed regular characters, and now it's a biweekly soap opera kind of strip that I syndicate all across the country.
One of the things that's interesting about talking about this new book, the Fun Home book, is trying to see how it relates to your strip and, you know, it being so related to your own life.
Yeah.
Compared to, I was just trying to think how much of your strip comes out of your own life also.
You know, in a way, I feel like my entire adult career is a reaction to my father's life, which is what the memoir is about, which is what Fun Home is about. It's about growing up with my closeted gay dad who most likely killed himself. And this very confusing period of my life where I came out to my family, and it wasn't until then that I found out about my dad. I told him I was a lesbian. Just, you know, stumbling along blithely in that youthful way that people do. Like, I thought I was just being really honest and open, and unwittingly I kind of outed my dad, or I you know, destroyed his cover. And a couple months after that, he was hit by a truck. And I'm pretty sure it was suicide. I feel like he just, you know, I had, like, shattered his safety somehow, and he couldn't handle it. So, I mean, it's much more complicated than that. The book's very complicated, and it goes off in all kinds of different directions about all the many different forces acting on my father. But in that sense, I feel like my comic strip, you know, making a comic strip called Dykes to Watch Out For, my career was kind of a reaction. It's like I didn't want to be secretive. I didn't want to lie. It was important to me to just be extremely open about myself. Mm-hmm. Not that I thought of it that way at the time. It just was, I'm sort of psychoanalyzing it in retrospect.
Right, right. Does it ever, now, does it ever feel like you're too exposed, or how do you feel about that?
With this memoir?
Yeah.
Well. Yes. Yeah, I feel a little crazy, like, what possessed me? And I don't know what to say. It was a story I felt really compelled to tell. I don't know, I'm a pretty shy person, but I have this weird, like, deep underlying vein of exhibitionism that I think I tapped into.
I think sometimes there's a little, you know, kind of yin-yang about that whole issue.
Maybe. But it's weird now having the book out in the public and having people know all this very, you know, quite intimate stuff about me and about my family.
Let's talk a little bit more about the book and your father and your relationship. Your father is such an incredible presence in the book. What an interesting character.
His character.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. As you mentioned, he was closeted gay man, but also these many other aspects that come out. He was a high school teacher. He owned the funeral home?
Yeah, it was a family business he took over from his father.
And that's what's referred to in the title of the
book. Yeah, fun home comes from the way we would refer to the funeral home among ourselves.
So there's that whole element. He also seems to be sort of a frustrated interior decorator.
Yes.
With a specialized area of interest in that, it sounds like, with the Gothic or your home.
Yeah, he was a big Victorian freak. Our house was like a museum. Yeah, he had all kinds of things going on. He also was an antique dealer. We mentioned that he taught high school English? Yes, yes. And he loved literature. And that's a whole other strand of the book, is some of my father's favorite books and authors work their way into my book on a kind of structural level.
Right. It seems that his favorite book was Ulysses?
Yes.
And so there's, yeah, a great section where, when you're talking about your own coming out and realization of being a lesbian, and you're taking this class.
Yeah, it's all happening at the same time.
The books that you're reading there, he's also telling you things about them and giving you recommendations and stuff, so it's all sort of converging. And
Yeah, he was always very kind of actually overbearing in the way that he pressured me to read various books. And I would always resist, but somehow one winter at school, I just ended up by default having to take a course in Ulysses. It was the only, like, it was that or, like, small engine repair. And it was his favorite book of all time, so it was very, I just had a lot of mixed feelings about it. Plus, it happened to be right at this moment when I was realizing I was a lesbian, and I was doing all of this intense reading on my own. Growing up in this very literary family, the way I came out was not like by falling in love with someone or, you know, having a crush on someone, but by reading about it in a book.
What book was it?
It was a book of that film, Word Is Out. It was a gay documentary, just interviews with various men and women about how they'd come to be, how they came out and what their lives were like. I didn't know about the movie, but there was a book made from it, and I was reading that in my college bookstore one afternoon. And all of a sudden, I just had this epiphany that, oh my God, that's what my deal is. But then I started reading everything I could get my hands on, you know, The Well of Loneliness, and there were a lot of books just coming out then, really, you know, important historical things, Out of the Closets, Into the Streets, Our Right to Love, all these early gay books. So I was reading all that stuff for fun, and then for class I had to plow through 768 pages of Ulysses or whatever it was, and it really just did not capture my attention. But I made myself do it, and now in the memoir, what I realize is that all these interesting ways that the story of Ulysses was exactly what I was living through, that my coming out process and my relationship with my dad really parallel in some pretty remarkable ways the whole odyssey.
I'm speaking with Alison Bechdel. We're talking about her graphic memoir, Fun Home, a Family Tragicomic. You mentioned that it's not really known whether your father committed suicide or it was an accident. It's a very distinct way that he died. Could you talk about that a little bit?
Well, I know that my dad had been having like a hard time. His temper had gotten worse in the couple of weeks before this accident. My mom had asked him for a divorce finally after, you know, 20 years of living with, I don't know when she found out about his sexuality or how, but she knew about it, and it was, you know, it was a problem. And so finally she was going to leave. And he was reading a book by Camus called A Happy Death and leaving it lying around the house in a sort of obvious way. You know, that could have been nothing, but it's not like he left a note or anything. Just there's some suspicious circumstances. And really, I, you know, as I said before, I felt, feel like I like blew his cover. Like he had this, you know, life that he was managing to hold together, and I came along acting as if it was no big deal to be gay and just kind of couldn't compute any longer.
Mm.
So what happened was he was gardening. He was clearing brush on some property, carried it across the road to throw it over the bank, and a truck hit him. And the truck driver, another suspicious circumstance, described my father as jumping backward into the road as if he had seen a snake or something. So, I don't know, that just sort of fit in with the theory. But who knows?
And there's a scene in Fun Home where you appear to have the barest minimum of discussion about your mutual gayness.
Yes.
And I can't help but wonder, is that really what it was like? I mean, it seems so, it's so minimal, and like there could have been so much more.
I know. Yeah, I had one conversation with my dad where we both were open with one another, as open as we got. And it's in the Ulysses chapter of the book, and it, to me, it very much parallels in Ulysses the meeting of Stephen Dedalus and Leopold Bloom in the Ithaca chapter, which is in the Odyssey. It's when Ulysses and Telemachus, his son, finally get together. His son's off looking for Odysseus for all these years. So it's a, you know, it's a reunion with the father scene, and it was not a perfect meeting. We didn't really touch, we didn't really connect, but we connected a little bit. He told me about lovers that he'd had, and he tried to take me to a gay bar. That was the funniest part. But I was underage, and they wouldn't let me in, even though he was my dad. And I regret that. That is one of my biggest regrets in my life, that I didn't get to go to a gay bar with my dad.
Mm-hmm. When you look back on it, I guess these young men who were sort of childcare,
yes,
people in your
our babysitters and landscape helpers. My dad, we always had these like very handsome young men hanging around the house, mostly probably students of his from the high school who he would hire to do stuff around the house. And I don't, you know, I'm sure there was stuff going on. I don't know what. I don't know any details. But one in particular, one guy we went on vacation with, my dad and Roy and my brothers and me went to the beach. And my mother did something separate. She had her own vacation. She did something else. But years later, after my dad died, I found a snapshot of Roy from that trip to the beach when I was 8, lying on a bed in his underwear and his jockey shorts. And it was finding that photograph that really kind of sparked this whole project for me, this realizing that my father had this whole other life going on. If there was, but yet here it was right in plain view, and with this picture of Roy right in the, you know, other pictures of kids at the beach. So I wanted to figure that out.
I think that's one of the strengths of this memoir, is that it's getting at that sort of childhood stance of always sort of not being in the know and trying to figure out these various parts of life that are all around you in one way or another.
Yeah. And what you know without really knowing it, too. I don't know. I don't know how children do it. So glad I'm not a child anymore.
The whole issue, you mentioned it when you were talking about these young men, that you aren't sure what went on, and there's that whole issue now in memoir today about what level of truth needs to be
right.
part of a memoir. Was this an issue when you were putting this together? Had the whole thing broken about James
Fry?
No,
this was, I've been working on this book for 7 years, so the whole Fry flap, that didn't happen until after I was done with it. Mm-hmm. But I was very scrupulous. As you know, I, part of what I did in the book, part of my whole, the voice in the book is an examination of my own methodology as I tell this story. How accurate is my memory? I also drew a lot on documentary evidence, which I felt like I could trust a little bit more than my memory. I had my childhood diary entries. I had all these photographs. I had letters from my father. And I tried to be pretty scrupulous about not making stuff up. Obviously, I had to make some things up. I couldn't, like, recreate conversations verbatim from 35 years ago. So that, of course, I made that up. But I tried to be accurate. Sometimes I would... Like, in one case, I let something inaccurate stand because it worked so well. There was a... I remembered my mother giving a book of my dad's poetry to a girlfriend of mine. And I had this very clear memory that it was a Wallace Stevens book. Mm. But I built a whole chapter around this Wallace Stevens poem because of that. But then I showed it to this old girlfriend, and she said, "Oh, no, it was a Theodore Retke book." And I was just crushed. Oh, God, because... It just didn't work. So I let it remain a Wallace Stevens book, even though it wasn't really. So I cheated in ways like that. But it felt still true to the story. But I guess James Fry would say that too, wouldn't he?
So your mother, I wanted to ask you about a little bit about too, because she's not nearly the presence in here. Obviously, it's more about you and your father. But what's been her reaction to this? How's she feeling about this book?
My mom is pretty amazing. I mean, she's very uncomfortable that this information is out there. She's quite private. I don't think a lot of her closest friends know some of this stuff. But she didn't freak out when I told her I was going to do it. She didn't try to stop me. She did cut me off from any further information. She felt hurt that I was, you know, a lot of the stuff I write about it in here, I only know because my mother told me about it at some point. So she cut me off from any more information now that she knew I was going to, like, make use of it. Also, she's just been very supportive in her way. I mean, I talked to her the other day, and for some reason this book is, like, getting all this attention. It's really weird. I was in People magazine. I was in Entertainment Weekly.
Oh, wow.
It's having a very odd reception. I'm very happy about it, but it's kind of weird. So people are finding out about it. My relatives, like, you know, distant relatives are, like, calling my mom, and it's all starting to hit the fan. And what she said to me as we were discussing this and people's, you know, possible anger or pain about the book, she said, "Well, the story is the important thing." And I just thought that was remarkable for her to be able to have that kind of aesthetic distance to the whole thing. And I feel like I learned that from her.
Huh.
I'm just very grateful to my mom.
How's she doing these days?
She's doing okay. She's psyched about the publicity, too, oddly. She will refuse to discuss the content of the book with anyone, but she'll happily tell you, like, what number I am on Amazon.
And she's still in a small Pennsylvania town?
She lives in a nearby town.
Mm. I think that's one thing we didn't say, is that all this takes place in a relatively rural area.
Yes, in central Pennsylvania.
Yeah. You left there and went to New York and were
yes,
you?
I got the heck out of there. It's a lovely place, though.
I guess the one thing that wanted to ask you about that I on my mind is just the whole element of the funeral home and your experience of it as a young child, you and your siblings. Do you think that having that as your as a background in your life, you know, added to your sense of the bizarre or strange? And
yes,
all?
I do. You know, yeah, we had dead people around all the time. We didn't live in the funeral home, but my grandmother did up the street, and my brothers and I would do a lot of chores there. And I didn't, as my brothers got older, they would actually help my dad with the embalming and stuff. I never did that, which I'm very grateful for. But it was weird. It was just this very strange thing to have something so elemental and momentous be just a job, be just something that we did. And we would joke about it. Death just seemed like kind of funny because it was just always there. And so it was really extremely disorienting when my father actually died. You'd think you might get used to the idea of death having grown up around it, but it was just the opposite.
There's a scene where he calls you in. I guess he's embalming.
Yeah.
And just you have questions about what the significance of that was. What is this all about kind of feeling was part of that, of your experience of that.
Yeah. I remember that he just called me back to bring him something. I think I was 11 or 12 maybe, and there's this like naked dead man lying on the prep table. It was just stunning. I mean, not just the fact that he was naked, but also his chest was split open. I guess he'd had an autopsy or something, and his chest was just like wide open. My dad just asked me for the scissors or something. I was like, what? It was pretty traumatic.
Have you written about that before or drawn about that before?
No. Mm. I haven't really talked about it before.
Mm.
It was just something that we did.
So you've been working on this for 7 years, and
yeah.
You said, and writing the strip at the same time.
Yeah.
So how is it now to go back to that and not have this ongoing autobiography going at the
same
time?
Well, unfortunately, the autobiography is, like, continuing to go on. With all the publicity and stuff, like, I'm on this tour and doing interviews all the time, and I don't feel like it's quite ended. I even had to take a month off for my comic strip because I just didn't have time to do them this month. I feel bad about that. I'm trying to write a little bit on the road, but that's crazy too.
Huh.
I mean, I can't really focus. So I feel like I'm still in the middle of it.
I really welcome the chance to read this book and appreciate it. So thank you very much for talking about it with us. And
thank you very much, Kathleen.
I hope all goes well with your future writing and drawing and talking.
Thank you.
Okay. I want to tell people again that I've been speaking with Alison Bechtel. The title of her tragicomic memoir is Fun Home. This is Kathleen Stevenson. And you're listening to the Friday Radio Zine here on KBOO. Democracy Now! Is coming up at 11. We're going to try to sneak in a commentary by Jay Thiemeyer. Until then, it's a movie review of Sir, No Sir.